I'd like to call the Agriculture and Natural Resources Appropriate Subcommittee to order. Will the Administrative Assistant Kiva please call the roll?
Chair Altman.
Here.
Vice Chair Bell.
Here.
Ranking Member Chambliss.
Here.
Representatives Abbott.
Here.
Black.
Here.
Botana.
Here.
Buchanan.
Here.
Cassell.
Here.
Cross.
Here.
Gossett Seidman.
Here.
Hart. Killebrew.
Yes, ma'am.
Lopez.
Here.
Overdorf. Trunau.
Here.
Your quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Seeing a quorum is present, I want to welcome everybody to this very special Agriculture and Natural Resources Appropriation Committee, because we have a really special guest with us, and we're really excited about that. I want to ask everyone to make sure that cell phones and other communication devices are either turned off or silenced. Any member of the public wishing to speak, fill out one of those cards so we'll know what you're speaking about, get you in the right place. We have a relatively short agenda today, but we have a couple really exciting presentations. And I mentioned I am really excited that we have our new Commissioner of Agriculture, Wilton Simpson, here. And what a great honor, Senator, Secretary, what's your title now? Commissioner.
The best title is just Wilton.
Yeah.
That way we don't have to remember all those things.
We're real excited about you being here and excited about your leadership. I had the great honor of serving with you. I know what a great public servant you are and where your heart is, and we're blessed to have somebody like you willing to serve. So we thank you for that. We thank your wife for allowing you to do that. Mm-hmm. And so we're excited about working together.
Thank you, Chairman. And we know where at least the top three barbecue is right in the state.
Right. Yes.
In Cocoa, right?
That's right. We had opportunity.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for having me. And now that I'm experienced in practice of this, I should do a better job than I did at the last committee just a few hours ago. But the rural family lands, which is what we're here to talk about today, is something that's obviously near and dear to Florida and the long-term strategy of protecting our food sources and our waterways and our wildlife corridor. Also, the rural family lands was enacted in 2001. From year 2001 to 21, we spent about $100 million in that program. And in year 2022, we put $300 million into that program. And so what is our program? What are we trying to accomplish? We're going in to private, substantially farmers, and buying their development rights. And to give you a little, a few of the questions that we answered in the last committee is that when you go and you do a fee simple purchase, you're looking at sometimes three, four times the cost of going in and buying those development rights. So what do you get when you buy those development rights, right? The land remains in private hands. So those landowners are taking care of that real estate, right? We don't have to have staff and teams to go take care of it because they are taking care of it. That property also stays on the property rolls. So it is an integral part of that county's system then that will allow the tax base to remain there. The wildlife corridor is completely and substantially wrapped within the Rural Family Lands Act type lands that we would be buying the development rights on. And then of course, that's where the majority of the water recharge of our state aquifer would be done. So when you think about it just in terms of what advantages do we have from buying these development rights throughout the state, those are the type of the opportunities that we're looking for. And I'll mention it again on the national security issue. And when you think about safe, affordable, abundant food and family rural lands, the purpose of this program is to have generational farming stay amongst those same generations, right? Year after year, or if they choose to sell at some point, whoever purchases that property will then be farming that property. So it doesn't have an owner that would have to stay there, but certainly anyone that would be purchasing that would be looking at agriculture opportunities. I generally compare our food industry to our, as a national security issue, as it relates to our oil industry. because we're all familiar with the fact that oil is a national security issue. We have a strategic supply of oil. We have been trained to think that way our whole lives. We have not been trained our whole lives to think of food as a national security issue. And the comparisons I would give you is again, go back 30 years ago, Germany made a decision to buy its natural gas from Russia with a pipeline. And of course, under no circumstance would Russia ever cut off the pipeline of natural gas. And it was cheap, it was affordable, and that was a way of, you know, bringing a rift maybe even between the United States and Germany. Fast forward to 2022, right? There's a war in Ukraine. Russia not only cut them off, they blew up the parts of that pipeline system to cut off that energy coming into Germany. And as we may not feel here yet, it threw their economy in a real chaos. Energy prices went up 100 times normal. And we can imagine what that looks like in terms of economic GDP. When you think about agriculture, just stop and think for a second. What if there was no food in the grocery store for the next week? And if you don't think that's not a national security issue, then think about it being for 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And so when we're thinking about rural family lands and the long-term trajectory of the state of Florida, we have to protect these farmlands because we ultimately have to produce enough food to supply our nation, right? And Florida is a big component of the agriculture throughout the country. And as an economic driver, think of it in terms of GDP. Agriculture is the second driver of the economy today. We have a good economy. Tourism is the number one driver of this economy. In a pandemic or in recessionary times, agriculture becomes the number one driver of our economy. So you can put it in those terms of economic terms if you choose to do that. I prefer to use the method that Speaker Sproul said when we were passing the Right to Farm Bill. And he said, you know, you need a lawyer. He was an attorney, so you need an attorney once or twice a year. Hopefully not any, but maybe once or twice a year. But you need a farmer three times a day. And so when you put it in terms of what should we do and how should we treat our farmers, we've done a good job in the last 10 years with our upgrading our Right to Farm Bill, upgrading our Greenbelt laws, agritourism, and giving farmers tools they need to work with to stay in business, small farmers. We cannot predict when hurricanes are gonna hit, but we know they're going to. We can't predict when the avian flu is gonna wipe out 50 million birds in this country, but it's gonna happen, and we're gonna come back from this in the next year or two, and then it's gonna happen again a decade from now, right? And so we know those things. So what can we do to continue to lift the stones off the back of those farmers? And the rural family lands is not only one of those tools in the toolbox, but it's one of the more important ones when you think of all of the diversity that comes with that, the water recharge, the environmental green space, and the wildlife corridor generally within that. So we're very proud of the program. One of the things that, as legislators, we have to consider is we appropriated $300 million last year, and you would think, well, how much of that's going to roll over to next year? How much are you going to spend this year? And we're going to spend all $300 million of it. And if you appropriate whatever you appropriate this year, we're going to spend it too. So the department's goal is to have a $1 billion backlog at all times so that when you choose to appropriate those dollars, it won't take us 2 or 3 years to ramp up and then spend the money you've given us. Because if you ever want to spend more money than today on buying these development rights, just wait and buy them tomorrow. They'll be more expensive. And in 5 years from now, they'll be 20 or 30% more expensive than they are today, and so on and so on. So it is our goal, as the legislature appropriates these dollars, to be prepared to immediately spend these dollars. And when I say immediate, within a fiscal year that we would be in, so that any year the legislature wants to spend more, they will have a pathway to do that. In doing so, instead of us buying land, fee simple, you're getting 3, 4, 5 times the bang of your buck initially up front. So if you can buy 10,000 acres for $20 million, that same 10,000 acres, you might can buy the development rights for $4 million. So I can do that 5 times with those same dollars. So your dollar goes much further. That's not the most important dollar, though. The most important dollar is now I don't have to maintain that property. Because if I buy the property, I have to maintain it as a state. If I buy the development rights of that property, now our farmers are going to maintain that property, and it's going to remain on the tax rolls, which are vitally critical to our local communities. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, for having me here. I'm happy to try to answer some questions, but I hope this really brings to light the rural family lands and what the goals are.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I hope we have you, are lucky enough to have you for a few questions. I have a number myself. Yes, Representative Cross and then Representative Chambliss.
Thank you, Chair, and welcome, Commissioner. Great to see you in that new role. I have a couple questions, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
Yes, yes.
So I know that with this additional $300 million, one of the goals is to help to protect and restore, maintain connectivity within the Florida Wildlife Corridor. Last week, we had the opportunity to hear from DEP about some of their plans, and a large percentage, I looked back at my notes, 80% of their current work plan is projects that fall within the Florida Wildlife Corridor footprint. Has your department done a similar kind of evaluation, and can you share how many of the projects of your 131 would also qualify for the wildlife corridor?
That, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Thank you, and that's a very good question. I don't have a specific, like, percentage. The pictures and the maps that I saw, a substantial amount of those projects, probably a very similar percentage of those projects. And I know we have a wildlife corridor now defined. I define it a little more broad. I define it as if you see a map of the state of Florida at nighttime, you see where all the lights are. The dark parts are the wildlife corridor. And so it's a little, my definition is a little broader. Our primary goal is to buy as many development rights of these large tracts of lands that we can as from farming communities. And then then secondarily, obviously we're looking for improvements to the environment from that. We're looking for connectivity with the wildlife corridor. And my guess is, and this is always dangerous to do at this moment, but we would probably have a similar percentage of our land that would be within those corridors just because of the nature of where we're buying these lands.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I wanted to go back to your statement about your department being able to spend this money and spend it immediately. From my understanding, sometimes the appraisal process can be lengthy and maybe something that's a backlog. What is different with the way your department is being run that will help you to expedite, the delivery of these funds?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So when you look at the process, we have to clearly go through a similar process as Florida Forever projects would go through as it relates to appraisals, mapping, surveying, and so on. That process can be done in a relatively short period of time, 3 to 6 months max, I would say, even on appraisals. Our appraisers would be very similar to the appraisers that your basin boards would use or DEP or any of the other agencies. And so we believe that over the course of 6 months that we can produce a backlog of probably somewhere in the neighborhood of $1 billion worth of purchases. And I think the main difference is that, and I don't know this because I don't know DEP's system, but we're not going to look at a piece of property that we think that's our number one pick, and then we're not going to wait for 6 months for them to give us an answer. We're going to catalog and quantify, and we're going to not hesitate to go to the next property owner immediately if we are not able to make a close a deal with the existing property owner. So our goal is, the reason our goal would be to have $1 billion of backlog is that within that billion, there's probably 600-800 million of it that's ready to go today. And it just so happens that 100 million of that is within the ones we would have to fight over for a couple of years to finally make a deal. The only way that property is going to get bought is if you give us additional money the following year. And so when you see us move on and you see us actually purchasing this land and moving this money, I suspect that it's going to become a lot easier to negotiate with landowners on timing.
Thank you. I'm always happy to give more money for conservation. Yes. I'll just start by saying that. And you have great staff over at the department. My last question is kind of related to what's happening with the citrus industry, where we're seeing citrus greening and canker really have an impact. We know that our citrus farmers really are being left with no alternative but to sell to development, and that those rooftops are going to be the final crops. Has Rural and Family Lands or the department looked at a kind of a hybrid approach to easements that may help to prevent some of these lands from being developed permanently, maybe serving as water storage or aquifer recovery, knowing that they may not have the opportunity to stay in productive agriculture?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have, and what we're trying to do this year, and obviously it's the pleasure of the legislature, but we're looking for opportunities. We have what's called a CRAFT program that helps citrus farmers plant trees, and it's a cost share program, and we're looking at ramping that program up substantially, because when Hurricane Ian come through, not only did it, you know, take down, you know, maybe 25% of the trees, and I don't have an exact number on the ones that were uprooted, but clearly it took down 70-80% of the fruit that was in that path. And so we're going to look at a much more aggressive CRAFT program to help farmers replant in those areas. There are a lot of farmers currently doing water farming within the Okeechobee Basin, substantially around in and around the Everglades. It was something we're very proud of. A lot of that's developed in the last, you know, 8 to 10 years. And so I think that's important, to keep looking for alternative opportunities for agriculture to remain agriculture while our citrus industry can recover. And last year, I think we spent about $35 million, you know, working with nurseries, the Donaldson tree that we're looking at to reproduce, so it seems to be resistant. We're spending, I believe, $8 million a year with the University of Florida to try to find out, can we get a resistant tree to greening? And then we have some farmers in the Dundee, in and around Dundee, that are doing the CUPS program, the undercover program, and actually they're doing that in various areas of the state. Very expensive, but it's a alternative also. So we're going to continue to let farmers innovate. We're going to continue to try to help them innovate in the way they wish. And so some of those properties, water farming is a big opportunity. And a lot of those other farmers, though, will probably try to replant. And we're hoping to get a robust enough program between the federal resources and state resources to have a substantial amount of acres replanted, to have our iconic citrus industry back in the state of Florida.
Rep. Chambliss? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Greetings, sir. It's a pleasure again, as was stated by my colleague, to see you in the role. Look forward to working with you. So remember when I originally read, you know, the idea of the Rural and Family Lands Protection, like, as an idea, I immediately thought of the Redlands in Miami-Dade, right? So just a little bit about myself. I represent House District 117. So literally my district is, it's where the people who work in the Redlands live. And so, you know, the future of the Redlands is really important to me. And as you know, Miami-Dade is growing, and South Dade is the fastest growing area of Miami-Dade. I know a lot of my farmers, that makes them nervous. It makes them nervous because they're worried about developers continually encroaching on the UDB, and they're asking themselves, you know, will my children and grandchildren be able to farm if this keeps up? And so if you could kind of walk me into where on the priority list would communities like our agricultural land like that be? How could they potentially benefit from this program? And if this program, if they're even eligible for the program in the first place, I think they might be outside of the wildlife corridor. So if you could kind of walk me through that.
Chairman?
Yes.
Thank you. And it's a great question. And we're going to open up the program. And we have a cycles where we open the program. People will come in and say, hey, we want to be part of the program. They'll fill out the applications, go through the process. I believe we're going to reopen the program in March. So those farmers, if they're not already in the program, could clearly apply at that time. Those farmers could and be part of this process, because our primary objective is a secondary benefit if it's within the wildlife corridor. Our primary job in the Department of Agriculture is to make sure we're protecting our farmlands in large swaths. And if it's in the wildlife corridor, that's better. If it's close to an environmentally sensitive area, that's better. But certainly, I know the area you're talking about, and that's a very important area to remain in agriculture for all of the same reasons, right? Your water recharge, the jobs, the food supply. And when you think about, again, losing that food production, where would that come from? And you know, the answer to that all is not normally another American state, right? It's not another state. It's a foreign country. Nothing wrong with foreign trade. It's great. We need to do maybe more of that. But the reality is that we need to, first of all, take care of the people here at home. And this program, they could fit in this program, and it's something that if they apply to get in, we certainly would take a look at it. And again, it's going to be about willing sellers. We don't force anyone to sell their land at any point in time. This will be folks that will come in, want to sell, will negotiate, will appraise. There's a list of qualifications that you have to have. And once we determine that they are qualified to be in this program, then they're certainly welcome to the program. And those areas are, yeah, I know how critical these are. Growth is over on top of them now, every day.
Thank you. Representative Cassell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, nice to see you again. It's been some time. I feel like my question might be the unicorn situation, but I would like to ask you a bit of a hypothetical. I know a lot of this process is probably outside of your control. You're dealing with people who are voluntarily engaged in the process and can change their mind. But if you run into a situation where you have an approved project on the list, or several projects on the list become available at the same time and there isn't enough money for all of them. I know your goal here today is to hope you don't run into that situation, but What objective criteria do you use to decide between purchasing those different parcels?
Chairman, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Great question. And remember, this is week three, but the week three answer is... we're going to look for a high value of agriculture use, number one. Number two, if it's got a high value to the environment. And number three, and which is equal with number two, the wildlife corridor is something that's very important to us. And so we're going to look at those three criteria. And I think what you will have is in my experience in the real world, is you're going to have folks that will try to negotiate much harder than others. And I suspect with the first, you know, as in any business deal, if you have $1 billion worth of product and you only have $300 million, you're going to find $300 million that's willing to move very quickly. That ultimately will probably decide the first year or two of this money. And then I think we'll be in a better position to negotiate with the ones that are not so willing to come forth quickly or want to negotiate a better deal, more development rights within the conservation easements and things of that nature. So our hope is to have a very clear path of, you know, obviously larger sections are better. That would be always, even if you said, what are your wish lists, that's different than what may happen in reality. But certainly the criteria of being, you know, a family farm, it's going to remain a farm in perpetuity, and then we would then look at the proximity of those other issues, which are critical.
Yes.
Thank you for that answer. In 3 weeks, you're doing a great job. I'm only at week six, so bear with me. in the situation, right, I know we know the wildlife corridor parcels are, say, third on your list of priorities, but if you're in that scenario and you are talking about parcels of land that are involved in the wildlife corridor, is there an opportunity to work with DEP to assist in ensuring, you know, the acquisition of that property? Do you guys have that capability?
Chairman, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We do, and we are looking forward to working with DEP. There are some federal dollars that can be pulled down. There's private dollars available. There's, you know, county dollars available. Where we find those willing partners, counties, DEP, and other partners, we certainly will gravitate in that direction. I think the criteria that I would add to that, so there's no false sense of security with these folks, is we're going to be there as long as we can move quickly. And so we're not going to putz around and negotiate 6 months while we have $200 million in the bank. And so, you know, that's going to be the rule of thumb is that great project, great partners, because it stretches our dollar. And so what I would really look at is that the notion of buying these development rights today, if you're in some of these parcels, we're talking about $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 an acre for fee simple, and we're able to go in and buy that for 20% of that cost, which means we can take down five times as much property as you could if you were trying to do fee simple. And I think that's the flexibility that the rural family lands brings to the table. And so as long as those things happen, we're going to move. We want to partner. The secretary's a good friend, fine gentleman, and we're looking forward to partnering with his organization or the basin boards to really make our dollars get stretched.
Have any other questions? I do have a few. Thank you so much for being here again. I can't thank you enough. You mentioned the speed by which you can buy property, and my first thought is, and this is more of a conjecture, maybe a rhetorical question, maybe looking for reinforcement, is it true or not, but my sense, knowing being in agriculture, my family, and being a part of the agricultural community, my sense is maybe sometimes the reason you can work these deals quicker is that you know the agricultural landowners, you have a relationship, and there's a certain amount of trust. Do you find that helps you bring these deals to conclusion?
Thank you, and I believe it does help. And I also believe that we have some outside partners that have helped develop our wildlife corridor that will bring a lot of teamwork into this. And this office will have no pride of authorship or findership, whatever we want to call it. As these landowners are identified to us, you're right, we'll probably have some connection, and certainly we will have some connection within the agriculture world. And so I think it will make it easier. The other part that makes it easy is they've seen the commitment to the legislature for ongoing dollars. And then the part that has not always happened is the speed at which we will try to move. And so I think when our farming community have the relationships that we have, not only with the department, but our outside friends that have helped develop a lot of these criteria, they're going to want to come, and they're going to come very seriously because they know we're very serious about buying those development rights and very serious about moving on. And again, just because you miss year one, there's next year, right? That's what next year's for, as we say. And so we're looking forward to having that in the process and in the system. And what I hope happens is as we partner with DEP and basin boards and other groups, they'll see what we're doing, and maybe, obviously, we will be asking them to partner on our lands. And clearly, federal money, one of the bills just passed at the federal government level is bringing $700 million for these types of purchases, not to Florida, to the nation. And I think if we could come down with some really large projects of substantial, regional effect, then maybe we could get a bigger portion of that $700 million also. So we're going to be looking anywhere we can to find resources and friends of these farming communities so that they know that we're not only are we serious, but, you know, we've got money to spend. And the sooner we do these things, when you think about the long-term strategy of Florida, the encroachment of development then doesn't happen, right? You have a place to grow your food. And when we think about safe, affordable, abundant food, if you don't have the real estate to do it on in farming community hands, then you can't do those things. And we never want to put ourselves in a position next year or 20 years from now, Mother Nature comes through, creates a lot of burden, and then we don't have the ability to respond and grow the food we need to feed our population.
As we move forward, and I like using an agriculture term, low-hanging fruit, you're getting the ones out there that we can quickly acquire. They're important. Make them happen. Don't tarry. Get it done. I like that attitude. As we move on and we get deeper into that process, then we get into the more complex acquisitions. And one of the questions I have, and when I was in the Senate, I was fortunate enough to rewrite some of the conservation easement laws. I know we've got a long way to go to make it more workable for landowners. As we move on, we start looking for agricultural lands that can be used for wildlife management, sustainability in wildlife, sustainable agriculture, sustainable timbering. There sort of is a hierarchy of use on these easements. Have we started looking at the complexities of that and how you determine, well, this can be used for cattle but not row crops. This native forest can be used for sustainable forestry, not clear cutting. Where are we on in those spectrum issues and as we move forward?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So as the Department of Agriculture, we help farmers grow what they choose to grow, right? We're not in the business of telling them what to grow. Clearly, there will be incentivization programs that will help steer them in some directions if they choose to take advantage of those type of programs. When you look at our forest land, we can have, when you're thinking about carbon sequestration, we can plant many more trees every year. We're going to bring forth a program to be able to do that this year. We have resources within the Department of Agriculture to help prep land to receive planting trees as part of those programs. We're going to continue to make sure that we get those resources and the federal programs. And I'll give you an example where when Michael came through nearly 5 years ago, half of the fuel is still on the ground today. It's 5 years later. And so we want to be very aggressive and get rid of the rest of that material. And then because you could have a natural disaster in proportions of California here in our panhandle where all that fuel's on the ground. So we need to be very aggressive to get rid of that fuel. We've got some opportunity. We've got some insurance issues and things like that we're working through to get that done. But we need to replant those trees, right? And then when you're talking about, you know, decarbonization and things of that nature, that is clearly part of that strategy. So we're going to continue to work there. We will work with our farmers and ranchers on the things that they need to do. Cattle operations, farmers know where cattle should be grown and where citrus should be grown, right, are pine trees. And they'll take advantage of all those opportunities as capitalists do. But we're here to support whatever road they determine they should go down.
I'll use an example of the complexities as we move forward. And this is sort of a real-life issue that came up when we were looking at this conservation easement and how we needed to improve it and adjust it. Say you own 500 acres on the Suwannee River, and it's beautiful, pristine forest. You might have a spring popping up in part of that land. But the development pressures are immense. Waterfront property, people wanting to move to the rural areas, but you're a landowner and you don't have any money, but you don't want, and then the potential tax implications if you become zoned residential, whatever. But you want to preserve the land, but you might want to grow pecans, or you might want to do some sustainable timber.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm looking for is that landowner who is not in agriculture but like to go into agriculture, mm-hmm. but yet preserve the natural amenities on that site. Because I think we're going to run into a lot of those type of conservation needs, but yet keep in productive agriculture. How would you respond to that need, that particular acquisition?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so when you think of that, if that landowner comes and says we would love a conservation easement, and we currently have this mix of use, we have some cattle, some, you know, pine, some forestation, obviously, and some row crop. When you do the conservation easement and you buy that, the development rights, you put in there what those capabilities are in the future, which is what this farmer is doing, and like things, right? We don't know what we'll need in 30 years or 50 years. So if that farmer chooses to go to, pine trees, a forestation of their 500 acres, there will be nothing in the conservation easement that would prevent them from doing that. They would work with the department if they were, you know, bumping up against the boundaries of the, you know, because generally what we do is we say that you're allowed to have a couple of houses, depending on the size of your parcel. You know, they may have a family member that wants to build a house there. And so sometimes, I know in my area of the state, they've said, well, you can build up to two houses on this property with this many square feet in it, right? So in other words, it's very specific. Same thing with there's a commercial piece. If you're getting 20,000 acres of development rights, there may be a couple hundred acres in the corner that should have some sort of a development. You negotiate that all up as an upfront package. Once you have those development rights secured and it's in perpetuity, then that farming family or the one that buys it from them, because what you're seeing now is the value of what we bought 20 years ago at $2,000 an acre to buy the development rights. Those properties are selling for $10,000 an acre today. with the development rights gone, because folks want to come in and farm, and you may can pay $5,000, $10,000 an acre for farming land. You can't pay $50,000 and sustain it with cattle or citrus or other things of that nature today in most circumstances. And so, you know, our job will be is if that family does not want to sell the development rights, but they want to come into the farming community, we will help them with the program. So how do you get your land ready? That's a different program. We're going to help you. We're going to train you how to get your land ready. We'll obviously help you with the forestation of that property or row crops. They're IFAS, the University of Florida system, is part of this. They're in every county in the state. Certainly, we can point them in the direction to get the information they need. When we're negotiating those development rights, and you're right, at the first, you know, if there's $20 billion to be done, there's, you know, $10 billion is probably going to be reasonably easy. It's going to get a little stickier after that. And so in those cases, of course, that'll be after 8 years, so I don't have to worry about it. But
depends how much money we send you.
Depends on how much money you give us. billion a year, we're going to get there.
Right, right.
But the reality is that we're here to help all farmers. We have many resources in this state. We have FAMU here in, you know, Tallahassee and around the state. We've got University of Florida. We've got IFAS throughout the state. So we're here to help farmers. And not only that, the BMP issues that we have, we're working that through the we're updating those systems to make sure we're using the best that science has to offer. And so it's very comprehensive. The rural family lands is just one of the pieces, one of the tools in the toolbox.
Any other questions? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, Commissioner, but when I hear insurance issues, my ears perk up. So I was just curious if you could enlighten us on what those issues are and if there's anything the committee can do to help you with that.
Thank you, Commissioner. So on the burn program, because of disasters that have happened in the country the last 5 years, just like when a hurricane comes through, the rest of the country blames us, like, oh, our rates are going up because Florida got hit by a hurricane. Well, when you have massive wildfires throughout the West, it causes our rates to go up, and in some cases it's cost prohibitive. We may want to start a program in Florida to where we have a certain standard that if our prescribed burners meet, that they can come under the umbrella of the state and have sovereign immunity for those burns. That's much better than trying to invent a citizens-like type insurance program where they're buying into it, but we're on the hook for a lot of dollars. And so we're looking at putting a program together that it will be a program of excellence. And if that burner meets that standard, then we can insure them under the state umbrella, something like that.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate your time, and we're excited about working with you. And we're blessed to have you in the position that you are in. And I'm sure we'll be chatting a lot, and hopefully we can get you to come back.
You sent me that the House is the first ones that summed to me. They're like, we've got these committees you've got to come. I enjoy coming to these committees, actually. To me, it's good to have the exchange, and it's good to understand the why we're doing these things. And it makes your job so much easier when you have all the information. So thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Okay, we will move on. Again, thank you, Commissioner. The next item we have is a presentation on land acquisition by the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. We have Melissa Tucker here with us, Division Director for Habitat Species Conservation, here to provide an overview of the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission land acquisition programs. And probably one of the questions I asked the commissioner is one that you probably could answer too. Thank you so much for being here, Ms. Tucker. And you're recognized.
Thank you, and I'm going to make sure I've got this working correctly.
It's a lot of beautiful slides there.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. I am Melissa Tucker. I'm the director of Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission's Division of Habitat and Species Conservation. And I'd like to thank you for providing us with this opportunity to give you information on FWC's land acquisition programs. The agency's mission is managing fish and wildlife resources for their long-term well-being and for the benefit of people. The agency is responsible for direct management of fish and wildlife, as well as habitat management that supports healthy populations. And we also manage public access and use to our wildlife management area system. Public access is an important part of our overall mission because experiences in the outdoors are critical to connecting people and wildlife and maintaining the public support for fish and wildlife conservation and support for Florida's public lands. The Florida Wildlife Management Area System began in 1941 and is focused on wildlife-centric recreational opportunities. This includes things like hunting, fishing, birdwatching, and hiking, just to name a few. The FWC is the lead management authority for 1.5 million acres that are found within the WMA system. This means that we have that lead authority for the activities that are occurring there. The FWC is a cooperating manager on 4.6 million acres within the Wildlife Management Area System. On our cooperating lands, we administer the public hunting programs and we assist with wildlife management. We always appreciate our partner agencies throughout the state, like the Florida Forest Service, the Water Management Districts, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the Department of Defense, because these areas have enrolled their lands into our public hunting system through the WMAs. The FWC Land Acquisition Program oversees the agency's process for identifying and prioritizing target lands for future acquisition. We focus on identifying additions and endholdings for each of our lead management areas. These are properties that are either adjacent to or within the wildlife management area. Once these are identified, we coordinate the process and the steps for acquisition, which can include mapping, surveys, title research, and closing. Acquisitions are approved by both our commission and the Board of Trustees. To date, through Florida Forever funding, we have conserved more than 13,000 acres through the additions and inholdings program. We do use a variety of opportunities for land acquisition. In addition to Florida Forever, we work collaboratively with the Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services on promoting the Rural and Family Land Protection Program. Keeping those working lands working that are adjacent to our wildlife management area is critical to improving habitat for wildlife. We have also successfully used funding provided through federal programs, such as the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Recovery Land Acquisition Funds and the National Coastal Wetland Funds. The FWC collaborates with local governments and water management districts, and we've partnered with land trusts throughout the state to assist in our acquisition of critical properties. I mentioned earlier that our focus for prioritizing land acquisitions is the additions and inholdings to our established WMAs. The Florida Forever Act tasks agencies that are responsible for the management of conservation lands to identify and target parcels for conservation that will aid in accomplishing their resource management mission. The Florida Forever statute also identifies 1.5% of allocated Florida Forever funds to come to the FWC for our additions and inholdings projects. The 13,000 acres that I mentioned previously were acquired with funding through that 1.5% allocation over the course of a decade. The identified additions and inholdings properties are necessary to help us facilitate resource management, to protect fish and wildlife habitat, to complete our project boundaries, and to improve our prescribed burning buffers. This also helps us to reduce illegal use, such as dumping, while also increasing public access and use of our managed lands. This is an example of a high priority addition that we recently acquired. This is a tract that's within the Triple N Ranch Wildlife Management Area in Osceola County. This is a 940-acre parcel that was part of the Osceola Pine Savannah Florida Forever Project. And this provides a critical link between the north and south part of this WMA. As you can see, management here is much easier when we can move right across that tract as opposed to having to move around it. In addition to the conservation of species that are found here, such as the federally listed Cresta caracara, it does also provide additional areas for the public to enjoy hunting and wildlife observation. Another example of a high priority area that we have not acquired yet are the inholdings that are here at the Caravelle Ranch Wildlife Management Area. The areas in red are owned privately, while the rest of the area around that is owned by state or the Water Management District. The Caravelle Ranch WMA is a roughly 10,000-acre wildlife management area that's situated between the Ocklawaha River and the St. Johns River, and it was purchased to provide protection to the watershed. We manage it for a suite of wildlife that includes bears and the Florida sandhill crane, and we also provide important natural and cultural resource management as well. Recreational activities here include hunting, fishing, wildlife viewing, hiking, and horseback riding. The Caravel Ranch is within the wildlife corridor, as is the Triple N Ranch that you saw previously, and I think it's one of the things that we'd like to make sure that that you're aware of is that even when we have identified lands that are conservation lands within the wildlife corridor, there may still be important acquisitions that are necessary there. The Florida Wildlife Corridor Act, as you know, was signed by Governor DeSantis in June of 2021, and it was the culmination of decades of work by numerous conservation organizations and programs, specifically the work of the Florida Wildlife Corridor Foundation and its predecessor. The Florida Wildlife Corridor defines a geographic area based on the Florida Ecological Greenways Network's highest priorities, and this really does help the public and policymakers to engage on opportunities to create a functionally connected network of both public and private lands. This vision for a connected wet network is critical to both how we manage our wildlife management areas and to achieving our mission of managing fish and wildlife. To support these efforts, $300 million was allocated to the Department of Environmental Protection to support the Florida Wildlife Corridor, and this also directs the Florida Department of Environmental Protection to encourage and promote investment in areas that will protect and enhance lands within the corridor. In the last 5 years, the state has acquired a little bit more than 52,000 acres that have been added to the wildlife management area system. Funding for these acquisitions did come from a variety of sources. Some of it is through Florida Forever, and then there is some through grants and donations. Of these acquisitions, 97% have been within the Florida Wildlife Corridor Priority 1 through 3 areas. Similarly, the majority of FWC's identified additions and inholdings are also within the Florida Wildlife Corridor. Here's an example map of the Osceola Wildlife Management Area, which is found just south of Tallahassee. Outlined in blue here are the areas that we've identified as high priority targets for conservation and acquisition. And you can see that this is overlaid with the corridor priorities 1, 2, and 3, and these align very well. Our priority list has more than 380,000 additions and inholdings identified, acres of additions and inholdings identified. 75% of those are within the 1 through 3 priority areas, and when we look at the 1 through 5 priority areas, 94% of them are there. There are a few high priority targets that are not within the corridor, and these are usually species-specific or management-specific concerns. We do continue to identify key properties that help us to meet our mission and provide a wide variety of wildlife-centric recreational opportunities. We have a variety of current projects and partnerships that we're working on. We have pursued and been awarded federal land acquisition grants. Some of these are to protect critical wetlands, important habitat, and endangered species such as panthers, reticulated flatwood salamanders, and scrub jays. We also continue to work with our sister agencies on acquisition priorities through state programs, and we partner with conservation organizations, land trusts, and local governments to acquire priority areas. I would like to thank the many partners that we do work with all across the state that helped us to conserve and manage Florida's wildlife. And I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to present, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Representative Bell.
Thank you, Chair, and also thank you for the presentation. You mentioned our land management on hunting. How many land management hunting areas do we have? Not acres, but how? Like, if I wanted to seek out and go do public hunting, where would I go to find that information, and how many do we have?
So this is the map of our lead areas and our cooperative areas. So all of our cooperative areas have hunting. That's 96 areas. The majority of our lead areas have hunting. That's 55 areas. So you're looking at a little over 140 sites that you could potentially go and hunt.
Wow, that's amazing.
Have access to. Sorry, Chair.
Any other questions? See any? One, I wanted to compliment you, and we've talked a lot about the Wildlife Corridor, and I think you've been the first to really show us some detailed, actual images and maps of parcels and what's been purchased, what's working to be purchased, and I really compliment you on the quality of the slides. These are very, very helpful. It shows, to me, the nuts and bolts of what's out there and what needs to be worked on. We had a presentation in terms of the agricultural component, rural and family lands. And some of these easements that are purchased on farmlands, is FWC working with agricultural lands and assisting them in wildlife management?
Chair, if I may. So yes, I think there's two different programs that we have that assist with that. So we have, in addition to our land acquisition program, we have a landowner assistance program. And they provide direct assistance to landowners all over the state. Many of them are agricultural properties. And they help them navigate the many different options for federal funds for offsetting management activities. And they help them write management plans so that their agricultural lands can also benefit wildlife. A lot of times you'll have a landowner who's doing agriculture, but they also may want to hunt. They may want to increase the number of deer or turkey or quail. And so we help provide assistance for them to be able to do that. That's one of the ways that we collaborate. One of the other ways is that we have wildlife and agricultural best management practices that are voluntary. And again, they tell people how to undertake their agricultural activities in ways that are supportive of imperiled species.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I want to get oriented again here. Okay, I think we are done. We finished early. I want to thank all our presenters and our board members. So this does conclude our agenda. And if there be no further business before the committee, and seeing none, Vice Chair Bell moves that we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.